Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and before I introduce my guest, I want to say thanks to everybody who gave me some feedback on the last two episodes, Randomania. It was just me, two friends, sitting around, having a few drinks, just talking about anything and everything. I can't believe people actually liked it, but thank you for everybody who gave me nice comments, either via Twitter or on the website or whatnot, so thanks a lot. But this week, I'm sitting down with a man who many of you in the Central Ohio area may know because he's on CD1025 every Friday giving his reviews about movies and whatnot, Mr. Kevin Carr. Kevin?
Hello.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
You may also know me as the stinky guy who sits next to people in movies occasionally. I try to bathe if I go out of the house. I was raised good.
You were not raised in a barn?
No. Well, no. I had a wash before I left the barn.
Oh, okay. All
That's
right.
the way
gotcha.
It works.
I gotcha. Well, let's kick things off. Let's start a little bit about how did you get started in movies? Like, what was your interest in movies? Did you start, like, as a kid, did you see Star Wars or something like that and go, oh, yeah.
Well, I've always loved movies. It was sort of like the go-to entertainment. And, you know, every kid has TV and stuff like that, and you're not supposed to babysit with it. Well, I watched a lot of TV as a kid.
Sure.
But I also saw movies, and, you know, like my family, we go to movies every weekend. You can barely get my dad to a theater now, but we used to go all the time when I was little. You know, and I saw Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and I remember it was in 2002, you know, a little over a year ago, everyone was like, summer of 82, summer of 82, how awesome it was.
Right.
I saw a lot of those movies in the theaters. I mean, I didn't see Blade Runner. I was like 11. So, you know, I didn't see Blade Runner, but I saw E.T., and I saw Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and, Poltergeist? Poltergeist was 84. No, it was 82.
Yeah, it was 82, yeah.
All that summer of 82 stuff I got to see in the theaters, and it's kind of neat. And I remember recently, there's one of those things that you click on the lists and you say, how many of these have you seen?
Hey, it's on like Facebook. Yeah.
I never save it because I hate that crap.
But no, same here.
But now and then I'll look and see what how many movies I have. And there's one that was like, how many movies are turning 30? So it's all these movies from the 80s. And I'm like, I've seen that. And the only ones I hadn't seen were like Purple Rain and Break-In. The original Break-In. I have seen Break-In to Electric Boogaloo, which made no sense because I had no lead-in with Break-In. But those are the only two out of 30 I'd seen. So I saw all of them in the theaters. And you get these kids who are like in their 20s who are like, I wish I could have experienced that on film in the theater. Well, I saw it.
Yeah, right.
It was neat, but it wasn't that great because the seats were really uncomfortable.
Right. And for me, a lot of those movies, I was so young, I don't remember. I kind of remember.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Pulling back, oh, wow, you're old. I'm older. I'm 42. That's okay. I'm the answer right now. Hitchhiker's Guide? Anyone?
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah. The answer to life, universe, and everything is 42.
It's 42.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, and you have to figure out what the actual question is, though.
Which is why you have to work backwards.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you had to build an entire computer for that.
Hmm.
So read Hitchhiker's Guide. You're a literature guy, aren't you?
I am. I have, you see, this is more my speed.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm a comic book geek.
X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, I never read Marvel. I didn't have the money to do Marvel and DC.
Okay.
So I chose Superman and Batman over Spider-Man and the X-Men and all that sort of
because
thing.
Did they seem more realistic?
I
use that term loosely.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to use air quotes.
Aliens from the other planet with spandex and a guy who dresses up as a bat. That's totally understandable. A guy who's a spider? Absolute bullshit. No, I loved Superman.
Okay.
And I loved Batman. Right. And even though in the 70s, when I grew up, they had the Spider-Man TV show and the Incredible Hulk.
Right.
The stories were a little more mature. So like when I was like 8, I was reading Superman and Batman. Those tended to, and that just sort of started me off.
Okay, gotcha.
And so I actually never read the Marvel movie, which is funny because when I'd see the Marvel movies, they can change stuff, and I'm like, I don't care.
See, I was the other way around because Marvel had all the toy tie-ins.
Yeah.
And all the movie tie-ins because Star Wars comic book,
yeah,
Marvel, G.I. Joe, mm-hmm, which I was a huge G.I. Joe fan still to this
Greatest
day.
Greatest American Hero.
Yeah. Shogun Warriors. For some odd reason.
That's not one that people usually throw out.
No, it isn't, but it was a favorite of mine. I don't know why. Giant robots that would,
that's amazing.
You know, yeah, that would, you know, destroy cities to defend them. Sort of.
So basically yeah. Pacific Rim.
Kind of. Yes. It was. So, wow, we certainly deviated from the
original. Oh, that's what I do. That's,
part, but that's okay. There is, my listeners are used to that.
The last thing you want to do is say, just talk about whatever. And you won't believe what comes flying out of my mouth.
So then how did you get into being a film critic?
Well, I used to do independent film, actually, in town. And there's
as
a nice...
you used to produce?
Yeah, I produce and direct. Okay. Back okay. in like the early 2000s, like okay. right around 2000, right around the turn of the century. And there's a good saying in independent film is, do you know how to make a small fortune in independent film? Is you start with a large one.
Okay.
And it'll just dwindle away. It's very expensive. Even in the day of digital video. So when that one just really wasn't getting the traction I wanted, I had always wanted to do film criticism. It's not so pretentious when I say
it. I was going to say, yeah. You should have a beret and an ascot when I you should. Say that. Film criticism.
I left my beret and ascot in the car. No, but I always wanted to do movie reviews and stuff like that. And I remember I had applied it. And there, when the internet showed up, it opened it up for people to, you know, do whatever they want.
Sure.
And like I said, I found somebody to do it. And people ask, how do you get into it? I go, just declare yourself God, declare yourself emperor, and take over and start doing something. But the thing is, you got to watch everything. You got to see everything. You can't just see the stuff you want because mm-hmm. it'll set your barometer. Like, I remember I showed my kids all the Alien movies last year. Well, a year and a half ago.
Okay. How did they take them?
Oh, they loved them.
They loved them?
Yeah. Right. But they were like 9 and 11 at okay. the time. All right. So it's all, right. all R-rated movies. Okay. You know, so they're all watching right. these. But I remember I posted on Facebook, and a friend of mine was like, oh, Alien 3 sucks. It's the worst movie ever. And I'm like, it's not a good movie. It's not the worst movie ever.
No.
You need to see a lot more movies. And so when you're a film critic, your bench, your barometer is set a much lower. You know, so you see a movie like, I just watched Riddick this week on Blu-ray because I got it to review. It's not a good movie, but it's okay. You know, it's not terrible. You know, something it's a great way to waste some time on a Saturday afternoon. And so that's where you can kind of get that feel for it. So I started writing for this publication that doesn't exist anymore, online. And then we actually had a website called 7M Pictures, which was an independent film site. And my the editor of this other site that I was publishing on, she wasn't really diligent on getting my stuff posted.
Okay. Right.
So if you're hooked up with the PR people in the studios, they want to see your reviews. So I just started putting them on 7M Pictures, and the film stuff started to dwindle off, and I kind of just took that over, and that became my site. And
which is still in existence today.
Still in existence. And we're going through a revamp. I had thousands of reviews on there, so we're still okay. holding it over. And doing
gotcha,
it.
Gotcha.
But the current site is up and running, and you can go there, 7mpictures.com. While I was trying to get other people to publish my reviews, not knowing before Google sort of made that unappealing to do.
Sure.
I found a guy out in Westerville, oh, not Westerville, out in Wyoming. This guy out in Wyoming who ran like a block of sites and said, hey, can you run my stuff in? So he did. And I was out there for a summer. I was doing a big trip with my family because my wife's a teacher and we took a big long trip. And we stopped in Cheyenne and met him. He put me on the radio there. And so I got to know the woman who runs the radio station. And she started saying, well, if you want to send me your, send me like cut, like audio files, you know, like 30,
yeah,
40 right, second
sure.
reviews.
Yes, yeah.
Do that. So I started doing that, sending them through her. Then she started sending them through Clear Channel, and that's when Clear Channel was becoming this behemoth. And so it went to like potentially hundreds of stations around the country.
Which I, you know, I have here is just doing a little bit of research, which is odd. I don't do a lot of research.
Oh my God. I feel special.
Cincinnati, Rochester, Cheyenne, Wyoming, mm-hmm. Tampa, yep. Memphis.
Yep.
Cleveland,
Chillicothe.
Yeah. So that's how you ended up in all these different cities.
Yeah,
these particular
just networking snippets. And whatever. And I'd send them out, and if they ever needed somebody to do like comment on the Oscars, the Clear Channel News Desk, the National Clear Channel News Desk doesn't exist anymore, but they used to.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they just the internal structure okay, doesn't work, and they have news, but they used to have a centralized location that would send out prep work,
mm-hmm.
and I'd send that to them, and then. They call me, like I remember when Iron Man came out. I did, like, they said, well, we'll just send out a note to all the stations and say, hey, you want a guy to talk about Iron Man? He's already seen it. And so I got stations that way. And
Gotcha.
Even though that structure's, it's been decentralized a lot, that's kind of how I started. And yeah, just being diligent and asking the question, can I be on your...
Yeah.
Do you need somebody to do reviews? And
so it's very grassroots, like, I'm just doing it by myself. Like,
I, no, you know, formal training whatsoever.
No formal training. Just that, you know, that's one of the things I've talked in many different episodes on this podcast, is that that's what I appreciate. Is I appreciate that independent spirit. Like, I don't need to be told how to do it. I'll do it myself. I'll learn how to do it, and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, obviously, it's been pretty successful. So you don't even have... Do you have a college degree in broadcasting or anything? Or
I have a secondary education. I have the same degree you do.
Really?
Probably, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I do. I'm qualified, in quotes, I'm qualified to teach secondary science and chemistry.
Oh.
Okay. Student taught. Never wanted to teach a day again in my life. Never got a job in teaching. Started working for textbooks.
But at least, though, you didn't go, you know, the Breaking Bad route.
No, because cooking meth back then was way harder. And I had no idea.
Or so they tell you.
You're here. You didn't have the internet back. Yeah. So you couldn't just be like, how do I make, you know how Google autofills?
Yeah.
And so it'd be like, make love, make meth. And you're like, oh, meth, there you go. Yeah,
chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Just scattershot. Something for everybody. Chocolate chip cookies. Chocolate chip cookies made out of meth. So. Yeah, that's how I did it. And I mean, the reality, and then I joined critic organizations. I'm in the Online Film Critics Society, the Broadcast Film Critics Association. I started my own podcast back in 2007.
Right, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. We'll talk about that.
But and that one, and that's now syndicated in, you know, in over a dozen stations around the country. So it's just building it from the ground up. There's not a lot of money in it.
No.
But there's not a lot of money in anything except cooking meth nowadays. So career change.
When the Westerville PD stop by my house,
that's right,
I'll have some explaining to do, huh?
Yeah, or just have it blow up, and they'll be like,
well, that podcast was correct.
That guy, he knew what he was talking about.
I guess. Man, I wish the Westerville PD would listen to my podcast.
They may now. I may write an email. I may write an anonymous email. I'll create a fake email address, you know.
Hey, keep an eye on this guy.
MethHunter@gmail.com. Like, hey, these guys are cooking meth.
You know what? That would be a great reality show.
That would be.
If you think about it.
Yeah. Well, there's Honey Boo Boo.
Well.
People always discount that. I remember, obviously you like movies, I'm assuming.
Sure, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, yeah.
I go to the
I don't get to see as many as you do. Well, yeah, 538.
Yeah, I mean, did see quite a
crying out loud, I'd never get anything done.
That's a lot.
You know? Yeah.
That's hysterical, because I'll be sitting at home on the weekend. I'll be trying to watch something. My kids will be running through the house. I got three kids, 5, 10, and 12. And my 5-year-old will be running through the house screaming or whatever. And I'm like, I'm working! Click, hit play. You know, and I'm just watching some crap. I'm watching Riddick and yelling at my kids to shut up so I can work. No, but I mean, it used to be at the Drexel, and it moved around to like the Grandview Theater. Now it's going back to the Drexel. They have these 24-hour movie marathons.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. They're fantastic. They, you know, they do a sci-fi one in the spring and a horror one in the fall. And I know the guy who does that. And a couple of years ago, they showed a Serbian film. The uncut version.
No way.
Yeah, and if you've never seen it,
I've heard about it, and I'll be honest. I have another friend that's a huge film buff too, and I told him about it. He goes, "I just scored a copy of that illegally.
Yeah.
I downloaded."
There were no legal copies at the time.
Right. And I go, dude, I heard some things, and I explained a few things. He goes, yeah, I'm deleting that. I'm like, yeah, I've heard things. I don't want to see.
We got a hot date. We're going to watch a Serbian film. Get liquored up. Pull out the Vaseline. No, this is, but and in fact, you can't get the, I mean, I guess you can import it, but you can't get the uncut version in America.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had to cut it. They had to make cuts in the film for the MPAA to allow them to exhibit it under an NC-17 rating.
Right.
That's how hardcore it is.
Okay, if you, listeners, just Wikipedia it.
Yeah.
You'll find out it is the most off-the-wall, bizarre. Yeah.
It's a brilliant movie, actually. It's a brilliant movie. It's beautifully shot. It's well made. It has a lot to say, but it is not an easy watch.
Yeah.
So, but I told Joe Neff, who runs the marathon, I said, why didn't you call and complain to the police yourself that you were showing this as an anonymous tip and get them to shut down the theater? That's like the best publicity
ever.
Because they showed the European cut there.
How did they manage to do that?
They got a print of it.
They just, yeah.
I mean, there was a print knock. There were prints knocking around before it ever got like South by Southwest, I think, showed it, and they got that print.
Okay.
Or something. I mean, it's in Serbian, so it's subtitled.
Right. You know? Along with all the other craziness that goes on in that movie.
And there's a lot of stuff you don't need subtitles for.
No.
You can figure it out.
Uh huh. Yes. Speaking of which, you know, upcoming, there's a lot of hype behind Nymphomaniac. What's your take on it? You think it's going to be...
I'm not a big Lars von Trier fan. Okay. I mean, his stuff is...
He's a weird dude.
Yeah, he's a
first
bit,
of all.
He's a bit odd.
He's a bit odd.
But, I mean, here's my thing. I have a feeling there's going to be the handful of raw scenes that you'd be like, oh, isn't that terrible? Oh, my gosh, look at that. And, oh, dripping and that kind of stuff. But then there's going to be, like, 90% of the movie is just going to be people talking and yelling at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you saw the trailer.
And that's part one.
There's your money shots. Or
volume one.
And it's like
me.
Charlotte. What's her name? Charlotte.
Oh, I don't remember her name.
What's her name of the woman? She's not.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
Give me when Jessica Alba does Nymphomaniac part three. You know.
I'll take Scarlett Johansson, but okay.
Nah, she's an idiot.
Wow.
She also said her lips are too big. She looks like she's been punched in the face. Doesn't she? She looks like she was dating Chris Brown or something. Next you're going to watch her. You're going to be like watching the Avengers.
I am.
You're going to be watching Don John and, you know, turning on your laptop at the same time. And you'll be like, yeah, Chris Brown.
Yeah, you've ruined it. Thank you. Thank you. Speaking of those movies that are...
Speaking of misogyny.
Right. One of my least favorite films ever. Bois Moi?
No.
You know, have the,
no.
The film from, I think it was 2004.
Isn't that the pate that's made out of goose livers?
No.
That's foie gras.
Yes, that's something else. It made a lot of headlines because it was banned in France. And then my friend got it on DVD because if it's banned in France, I have to see it.
Well, either that or it's like pro-American or something.
One of the two. It's first of all, it's 77 minutes and it's so predictable.
That's easy.
Yeah, it's so predictable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like... Just
what's it called again?
Bois Moi.
The hell does that mean?
Fuck me.
Okay.
In French. That's the title.
I know that that's the title. I figured you weren't asking.
No.
That would really cause a ruckus where we're recording.
It would. Yeah. I think that would.
It's a small room.
Very small.
I'm not flexible. At 42, you're not very flexible.
No, well, no. Anywho, that's one of my least favorite films.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was... What's some of the ones that you absolutely can't stand?
You know, I made a list because you asked what my...
Sure.
Because I always, at the end of the year, I do my favorites.
Right, which I heard, you know, you mentioned just recently in your last podcast, Gravity was one of your favorites.
Favorites
of the year was Gravity.
Captain Phillips was
Captain Phillips. And
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Oh, yeah, Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Her, which comes out... I got to see it early because I'm special. But yeah, that was... That's one of the nice things about being a critic is you get sent the stuff at the end of the year. And that's great because they like screens. Because inevitably there is some press rep who'll be like, let's have a screening at 7 o'clock at Easton on December 22nd. And you're like, really? Seriously?
Yeah.
It's just impossible to get to at all.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, those are ones good. But I always come up with a list of favorites and worst of the year. I feel pretty good about doing the best films of 2000. 13 or the worst films of 2013.
Which one of those? The Roman Coppola film?
Oh, God.
I had never even heard of. The premise sounds terrible.
It's awful. Yeah, A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. Maybe it was my second worst film of 2013. The worst being Grown Ups with Adam Sandler and his buddies.
I'm not surprised by that.
And I used to like his stuff. Like, Bulletproof was actually a funny movie. And like
Happy Gilmore was good. Yeah.
Billy Madison. Good movies.
He's just become
even like The Wedding Singer's fine and 50 First Dates. These romantic comedies. Then something happened. He got lazy. Nah. What's funny is if you meet a comedian who knows him, they will like defend him to the death.
Really?
Yeah, he's like the nicest guy in Hollywood.
That's interesting.
He's really cool. And I mean, I've never met him, but I was at CD 102.5 back when it was CD 101, and I forget who it was. Some comedian, and I made some offhanded comment about Adam Sandler. I mean, he almost was ready to punch me.
Really?
He's a really cool guy. I'm like, yeah, but some of his movies are really bad. What do I do?
Maybe he's got that motto like Samuel L. Jackson. What? They don't call it art, they call it work.
Oh, okay.
You know?
I didn't know which Samuel L. Jackson.
Which one I was going to whip out with, yeah.
I'm tired of the motherfucking plays.
So what's some of your favorites of all time?
Favorites of all time? Well, you know, and I pulled up my list. This one I'd actually had done because I put it up at Letterboxd. But it was like Sight and Sound did the 10 best movies of all time, so I did mine. And my favorite one, I kind of threw it all together, is Star Wars. Whole package.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
It's so definitive to me. And yes, even the prequels, I like the prequels. I grew up with this stuff. So,
yeah, I got you.
You know, people, Jar Jar Binks is annoying, and Jake Lloyd can't act, and there's some really terrible dialogue, but there's still great movies.
Yeah, I threw all three, the trilogy. I just call them the original trilogy. Yeah. Those are on my list.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Even Return. You know,
yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's got the Ewoks and they're stupid.
Yeah, yeah,
but I liked them when I was 10.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it's made for. And so I think it's the Goonies effect. I had this thing called the Goonies effect. The movie The Goonies came out in 84, 85?
Yeah, I think 85 or something like that, yeah.
And what's funny is it really didn't click in the theaters, but then like 5 to 10 years later, HBO played the shit out of that movie. For decades, it was just like it was like a Christmas story during Christmas.
It was on all the time.
And there's this group of people who are in their 20s and early 30s who just love the Goonies. And the thing is, I was just a little too old. I was like 16 or so when the Goonies came out, so it was still a little bit childish for me. And I watch it now, and I'm like, it's a perfectly fine movie. It's fun, sort of 80s Spielberg-influenced.
And see, I fall into that trap, too, a lot, because I will go back to watch classic movies.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, I don't get it. And then I'm reminded, you have to remember the time period.
Yeah.
Fine example, Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Saw
it. You're 10 years old watching that movie?
Yeah, like 5 years ago, I rented it. Yeah, yeah. I rented it like 5 years ago, or checked it out of the library. And I watched it. It's okay. But then I was reminded by several of my friends, man, you got to remember when that came out.
Yeah,
in that
context.
Was like,
in the social context. Yeah. And there's so much in Taxi Driver that's...
Right, and that's just a quick example that came up.
But even then, it's like the context of there's no such thing as a dirty movie house anymore.
No.
You know, not with the internet. And so the idea of these things and the weird... I mean, it's almost like people may not even know those existed.
Yeah.
You know, in the same
age. Right.
But no, the Goonies effect is people who just love the Goonies. And Goonies is fine, but it's not a good movie. But there are people who, like, it's the greatest movie ever made. And it defined their childhood. And when that's what defines your childhood, you're going to be much more soft on it. And so I think the prequels are these kind of movies. You know, 20 years from now, you're going to get kids growing up, and they're going to be like, I saw the prequels on DVD, and they're okay. I like them. You're going to get people defending those in 10 years, 20 years. Whereas now everyone's like, oh, those are shit.
Yeah.
You know, and right, I'm like, you watched Empire. Everyone says, unequivocally, Empire's the best of the
stories. Oh, yeah, hands down.
Yeah, but it has some really stupid stuff in it.
Sure.
I mean, it has terrible dialogue. C-3PO's out there quoting statistics. He never quotes in any other movie. You've got the fact that it takes, you know, Luke is talking about how he's trained to be a Jedi. Well, he trained in the Millennium Falcon with Ben Kenobi, and then Ben Kenobi gets killed. So what kind of training did he have? And then he's like, I gotta go to Dagobah. He goes to Dagobah. They leave Hoth at the same time. The Millennium Falcon is out. They go in a cave. They get to Cloud City. They get captured. And then Luke comes. What is that? A weekend? And Luke goes to Dagobah. And he goes through all this training. And he's leaving. He's like, no. Think of all you learned. And I'm like, how long was he there? Just a
weekend.
That's
a good point.
Yeah.
I've never really looked at it that way.
Does not time out right at all.
I was always freaked out by his hallucination. That he had with Obi-Wan.
Yeah,
with Vader, that always was like,
the
that's
failure
weird.
In the cave
that
they never explained.
Yeah, I'm like, what's that? Why would he, did he eat some of those funny brownies that Yoda made, you know?
Exactly. Like, yeah, Yoda's cooking something. He's cooking meth. He's cooking the Dagobah version of meth.
I don't know what that would be, but nonetheless.
It's probably just normal food down there.
It's normal brownies. That's what makes you hallucinate on
Dagobah. He's eating these fish and lizards and stuff. The other one I have is the second one. Number two is The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Which again, summer of '82. Sure. I didn't see it in the theaters, but this movie bombed back then. Nobody saw it, and it's a fantastic. It's one of the best sci-fi horror movies ever made. It fails the Bechdel test just colossally. Are you familiar with that?
No, what's that?
It's a test. It looks at your progressive feminism in a movie. And what it does is it says, are there any female characters, which there are none.
Right.
So right then, the only female in the entirety of The Thing is the computer talking to MacReady.
Yeah.
As voiced by Adrian Barbeau. And then, like, there's a couple people on the Let's Make a Deal show. And that's it. That's the only females even coming close to the movie. But do you have female characters? Do they talk to other female characters? And if they talk to other female characters, do they talk to them about something other than a guy? And if they don't do any of that, it fails the test.
That's a big real thing?
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Really?
And
I learned something. Yeah. I learned something today.
I can't, I don't know, it's Bechdel or B-L-E-C-H, or B-E-C-H-E-L, I don't know how to spell it.
Okay, alright.
But if you search the B-E-C-H-E-L test, you'll see it show up as Google. Okay. Giving the suggestions of cookies and
how math. To, how to use.
Excuse me, fighting a cold. But, yeah, so the Thing is a fantastic sci-fi.
Yeah, horror. Yeah, it is. It is.
It's brilliant. And so that one's, that's on my list. There's also, It's a Wonderful Life. Pretty much the exact same movie as The Thing. You know.
Okay, my favorite Jimmy Stewart movie is, excuse me, not Jimmy Stewart. I always get him confused. I always get him confused with Gregory Peck.
So, oh, okay.
Gregory Peck, yeah. That, I always don't know why. That's amazing. Weird. I know.
I always get Gregory Peck and Cary Grant mixed up.
Mixed up, too. To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's a good movie.
I like it because it's a favorite book of mine.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, it's, you know.
What's funny is when I saw it, I saw it in high school, To Kill a Mockingbird, and I didn't like the girl who played, what's the girl's name? Jem. I didn't like her. She annoyed me. And so I, like, hated it for years. And then I saw it recently, and I'm like, no, it's still a good movie.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Do you have any? I have a favorite documentary.
Okay.
I don't know if you have. I like Why We Fight, the Eugene Jarecki film about the military industrial complex in America.
Okay, that's recent, though, isn't it?
Yes, 2006, I think.
Okay.
I've watched it 100 times and still find it fascinating.
Really?
And interesting and very complex about how, basically, our military industrial complex dictates our foreign policy.
Yeah,
for America, and it's really thought provoking. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's good. One of my favorite documentaries is American Movie. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of it, never seen it.
That's an amazing film.
I've never seen it.
It's about a guy in Wisconsin who is just so passionately trying to make a movie. His name's Mark Borchert, and he's trying to make a movie, and he's just failing at it, just constantly. And it's heartbreaking to watch because. He's putting his blood, sweat, and tears. And this is back when he had to shoot film. I mean, it took place in, like, he shot in, like, the 96 or something like that. And he's struggling to make this film. And the film's terrible. Because they actually include it on the DVD. You get to see the finished, it's like a 40-minute short film. And it's terrible, but it's just this guy's passion and his drive to do it is an amazing thing. And he's got this friend named Mike who is sort of like a former drug addict, so he's not quite all there. And and he's just hilarious because he's like his stalwart supporter. He's always there. He'll be the one out there at 6 a.m. in the snow to shoot something when nobody else shows. There's a scene in there where he's calling people, trying to get them to show up and help out. And you just can hear, it's just his side of the conversation, and you can imagine, you can just hear the people getting out of it. And it's just heartbreaking to watch.
I'll have to check that out.
American movie, that's a great one.
Memento is probably my all-time favorite.
That's very good.
I really like Memento. It just literally blew me away when I went to the old Drexel down in Grandview and watched it. And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
That's a great movie.
It was really, really good. I dug that.
Yep.
It's one of my favorites.
Have you ever watched it in order?
I have never.
Oh, you should try that. It's kind of a different movie.
I know. I've heard that. But I kind of, like, part of me doesn't want to do it because I'm like...
It doesn't ruin it.
To me, it's like, I don't know if I want to do that.
But it's like when you watch it, it's sort of like it plays different.
Sure, I imagine it would, yeah.
But it's one of those things that you're like, oh, well, this happened, then this happened. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, and what you thought was going on by watching it in the theatrical order isn't necessarily exactly what happened. It's neat.
Yeah.
It's before Christopher Nolan got really pretentious.
Right, yes. Yeah. Although, I still liked Insomnia, even though that got panned.
Insomnia's got some problems.
But
it was, have you seen the original?
I have not, no. No, because that's a Norwegian remake or Swedish?
Swedish or Norwegian,
I forget. Yeah. No, I've not seen that. Mallrats is on my... I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, though I agree with what you said on your own podcast.
He's nuts.
He's getting a little bit out there.
That guy needs to stop smoking pot.
He does, because Red State was not a good movie. I'm sorry.
It had some decent parts to it, but it got like... It was one of those things that it was about a 40-minute movie that he padded out.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm like, okay, I get this. I didn't like the characters, so I'm like, I'm not sure they lived or died.
No, that was my big complaint. Like, they're all one-dimensional.
Everyone trying to be Jay from Jay and Silent Bob, but there's no Silent Bob, and there's no, even though you had Jay, Jason Mewes playing him, and he's a horrible guy, there's a certain lovability to Jason Mewes
that
the other actors never quite brought.
And speaking of that, one of the films that I own it on DVD, but I can't believe I'm admitting to this, that's also my most hated, Vulgar.
Vulgar's terrible.
Yeah. It just,
But that's Brian Johnson for you. He's an idiot.
Yeah, well.
He's kind of nuts.
Yeah, he is. And with that there, I think I'm going to give everybody a break for a minute.
Yeah.
So we can kind of catch our breath and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to a quick ad.
Yeah.
Come back here in a few moments. Mm-hmm. All right, so stay with me here.
We're going to cook some meth and cookies while we're gone.
I don't think we could fit anything in this room to do that with.
Yeah, maybe.
Mr. MacGyver.
I'm fat MacGyver.
All right, we'll be right back with Kevin Carr here in a minute. Yeah, I'm breaking it off a little funky for you, ladies and gents. John Orlando, the host of the PVD Cast. I want to talk to you about Stitcher Radio. You've heard me say it 100 times. Stitcher is the best app for your podcast needs. You don't have it, then what are you waiting on? Go over to Stitcher.com, find out how to download it, or if you're pretty tech savvy, go on over to the App Store, download it, get it on your phone. It doesn't matter if it's an Android, doesn't matter if it's an iPhone, doesn't matter if you have a tablet. You can download it and take your podcast with you anytime. You can listen anywhere you want, whether you have a Wi-Fi signal or not, whether you have a cell connection or not. Stitcher is the all-encompassing place you need to be for all types of podcasts, whether it's news, entertainment, sports, politics, whatever topic it is, Stitcher has a podcast for you. And if you need some customized recommendations, Stitcher will do that for you too. Hey, what can I say? I mean, it's just the bomb, which I don't think anybody says anymore. But nonetheless, Stitcher Radio. Go over to Stitcher.com. Download the app, get it so you can listen to the PVD Cast and all the other thousands of podcasts that are available to you. Do it today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, John Orlando back here with my guest Kevin Carr. We've been talking a lot about movies and just having a good time.
You should have had a big explosion sound in there.
I should have.
I'd be like, I got the cookies!
That would have been awesome. All right, so let's talk real quick about... I saw this quote, and I just wanted to get your take on it. Okay, so Greg Foster is the president of IMAX Entertainment.
Yeah.
And recently he came out and said that, in a conversation with Spielberg, Spielberg has stated that he feels in the next whatever, in the future is what he says, 5, 10, whatever years, that mid-level movies, there's not going to be a place for them.
Yeah.
That those are going to be relegated to just doing... cable television. What do you think of that? Do you think that's, and what kind of mid-level comedies? Like, I would assume that Grown Ups 2 would be what he's referring to.
Grown Ups 2 is kind of a tentpole.
Is it?
A bizarre way. I would put in this something more along the lines of, Riddick.
Riddick is
a great example. That's not one that's, they're not going to release that in the summer. It's not one that's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars.
So that would be more of an example of a mid-movie.
But since I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, do you think that that's going to go, that he's right? Do you think Spielberg's right on that, or what?
I think Spielberg's right to a degree on certain things with that. I think the way the studio model is, they do favor the giant releases.
Yeah.
And that's because of profit and that sort of thing.
Sure.
There has been dwindling audience numbers in America, at least. And I think that will drive this. But Spielberg he's not putting all the cards down on that, because I think where we're going to start going for these smaller releases, these middle releases, is a video on demand model.
I've seen a lot of video on demand stuff. Rubber, a bizarre, weird film that I went to see. I liked it. I went to see it at the Gateway, but yet within like a week of seeing it at the Gateway, boom, it's video on demand.
Some of them, they're on video on demand before they even get it.
Right. I think like Hobo with a Shotgun was another one like that.
Well, a lot of the smaller stable houses, IFC's does it a lot.
Yeah.
Millennium does it a lot. Magnolia does it almost with everything. And I think, and they'll still, now that you can have digital prints, it makes it cheaper to distribute the stuff.
Sure.
Because you used to have these giant film prints, and then you had to get a union projectionist to put it up and everything like that. So that's mitigated that a little bit. But I think you're going to start seeing these smaller releases, especially it's already happening in the independent world. I think that's what, and there, you see, it used to be that it had to go to the theaters, and if it went just straight to DVD or video back then, VHS, it was considered a lesser film.
It really,
really took a hit in any sort of
quality. Correct, yeah.
It really...
Whether it was good or not.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, fine example, one of my favorites, Black Dynamite.
Uh-huh.
You know, that I think that movie is hilarious. I think it holds up well. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, they literally took one print from town to town to town. Michael J. Just went and showed it everywhere. And I think that in, you know, as you talked about, if that went straight to DVD or whatnot, people would go...
Now you can ship those things out for like $50.
Right.
You don't have to pay a couple $1,000s for a print.
Right, right.
Even if you're doing it, striking a deal or whatever. I mean, and then the mailing cost and the threading cost, you just plug them. They're very idiot-proof. You plug them in, you push the right buttons, and they run. And I think you're going to see that. Like I said, you're already seeing that. And it's not a stigma anymore. And when the big studios start doing it, well, what you'll see is right now, these smaller studios are doing it. I think places like Fox Searchlight will start, sort of like those independent arms of things. Fox Searchlight, Sony Pictures, you're going to start seeing that being done with a lot of documentary, and you already are documentary and foreign films. And eventually, you're always going to have the Avengers.
Sure,
there's
always going to be those big budget blockbusters that everybody clamors to go see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, and I actually like that model. And I think what's also driving it is television in a weird way, because if you look at like the Golden Globes, Netflix, they got nominated for Orange and the New Black.
Yeah.
They got nominated for
House of Cards,
House of Cards and Arrested Development. These are legit, and then I think they won, House of Cards won the Emmy. I mean, these are not... They're not broadcast film. They're never broadcast on any sort of air. They're went straight through Netflix. You're going to start seeing on demand taking off, because now everybody's networked. Everybody's got internet in their homes. I mean, not everybody. There's a lot of people who don't. But
But
the movie going public does.
Yeah.
The people who otherwise would go see it in the theaters.
Right.
And the reality is, I'm sorry, going to theaters sucks sometimes.
It does.
People are texting, people are talking.
I will tell you this, I had the worst experience this past summer going to the Kappa movie series.
Okay.
Wanted to see the original Great Gatsby, the 1974.
Okay.
Girlfriend wanted to see it, loves the book. Sat in front of three elderly women.
Oh, Jesus.
That talked nonstop through the movie. Like, and I was like, your generation isn't supposed to be quiet during the movie. I'm the one that's supposed to be.
Old people are terrible.
Oh, my God.
Everybody's terrible. That's the thing. Every demographic, every age group is terrible in its own way. And like, you know, housewives, mothers, they're just constantly pulling out their phone, looking at texts. I'm a passive-aggressive asshole. So what I'll do is it's like, screening. So it was like this one. It was Planet 51, which is a terrible movie. It's an animated film. Nobody remembers because it was terrible. And I'm sitting there at the Easton watching it at the press screening. This woman in front of me pulls out her phone. She starts, look at the texts. And I'm like, seriously? And I kind of make some noise, and then she didn't do anything. So then I just put my foot on her, back of her thing. I did sort of like a restless leg thing. I start bouncing it.
Yeah.
And she starts giving me dirty looks, and I'm like, what? And then she finally gets the point, and she puts her phone away, and I stop.
Yeah.
But I'll tell people to turn off their phones. But see, in a regular movie, you don't have the power, because no theater owner or no theater management wants to kick somebody out anymore. Because that's
$15
for them. And then they'll be like, I'm not going there again.
I was surprised that I did get to go to a sneak peek of Don John at Easton, and they had somebody patrolling because they said, well, you need, your phones need to go away. This is a screening. We're going to be asking you questions about what you liked and disliked about the movies. Phones are away.
I admired that
because I was like, wow.
Well, yeah, they do that to protect the print. Sure. And that's why I like going to screenings.
Yeah, yeah. I also liked it because I got to jump in with my 2 cents worth. Because there's a guy with a clipboard, some little college intern asked my girlfriend, excuse me, miss, did you like the film? Yeah, what did you
like? It's not how he masturbates the porn. He does, I'm awake, I'm in the bathroom, he's rubbing one out, what's going on? I don't know, for some reason in my mind you're dating Marge Simpson.
I am not. Thank you, though.
Marge has her qualities.
She does, most definitely. Most definitely. I think also one of the other things that we, this is my own personal opinion, I think the quality of television has gotten better over the last...
It's gotten very cinematic.
Yeah, over the last 10 years, 10, 15 years, and I think that that's also driving this
Lost
idea.
I think Lost was the show that really...
Really?
Really started with that.
Well, that is an Abrams production, correct? Yeah, so...
2004 was when it started.
Yeah, so...
10 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, I really think that that's really also helped to drive this new model of how you distribute films, how you make films, how you promote films, etc.
I think it's great. I'd love a world because here's the thing. Nowadays, it always, like back when you and I were kids, it was a question of what could the theater offer that you couldn't get at home, and it's everything.
Right.
I mean, you had the big screen. You had the full aspect ratio. You had Dolby sound. You had all that good stuff.
You had everything.
Now, you can buy a 100-inch... You can buy like a 60-inch television, which is an obscenely huge TV, and you're not going to spend thousands. You might spend $1,000 on something like
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah.
And you can get a nice stereo hookup in your home for $100, a couple hundred bucks to get really good theater stereo. You can get it as a 3D movie. There's nothing you can't get except for the massive screen of like IMAX.
Right.
And nowadays, now they're going to see what the model used to be, what can we keep offering in theaters that you can't have at home? And the last big push was 3D. And that's worked. And it's a good thing, but now you have 3D on a home TV. And they look great. And now what you're seeing is that everyone's going to, well, let's start offering in the theaters what you have at home already. A comfort chair.
Beer.
In-room dining.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
why would I want to go to... And this is no flies on Easton on this, but why would I want to go to Easton and pay $8 for a beer when I can get a six-pack at home and watch it?
Right, and have the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then somebody's not texting in front of me.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Which is why like the Alamo Drafthouse model, I think, is going to take hold a little bit more. They're already franchising that one out. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with.
The Alamo Drafthouse is a theater out in Austin, Texas, is where it started. And they have a no-kid policy, first of all. You can't bring kids in.
Oh.
Which is good, because I was in Easton. That's when I was seeing Anchorman 2. And it wasn't an Anchorman 2, but there were people walking in literally with a child in a Snuggie. You know what a Snuggie is?
Yes.
That thing that you strap the kid, that papoose that you strap on your belly. Uh-huh. You remember walking in? I'm like, seriously? You're walking in with that.
Yeah.
This is it's just going to get worse.
Right. I forget what the heck it was that I saw where they brought kids. This family brought kids, and I'm like, why are you bringing your kid to this?
A Serbian film.
No, it was not that. Although, my girlfriend was pleased that when we went to go see Monsters University, I didn't make a big deal about the kids talking. I was like, because kids get a pass.
It's a kids movie.
It's a kids movie, A, and it's B.
You really can't.
Kids. I can't be like, shut the hell up.
Shut up. What's your problem, you little shit? Although I have yelled at kids before.
Well.
I yelled at a family once. I almost got in a fist fight in 8 Below.
Really?
Yeah. Because the parents, it's the parents, really.
Right, sure, right.
Because the parents are talking to the kids. The kid would shut up if the parents wouldn't keep going, oh, look at the doggies. So I told them to shut the hell up, and they got mad that I swore in front of their kids.
That happened to me, too, when I went to go see G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, which is on my worst movies ever.
It's not a good film.
No, because let me, Kevin, I waited 25 years for a G.I. Joe movie.
No, the first one wasn't bad. Did you like the first one?
No, this is the one I'm talking about. Not
the original one.
You're talking about Retaliation.
Yeah, there's some things I liked about that one. But
here's my thing. I grew up an avid G.I. Joe comic book collector and toy collector. So there's a mythology, and though I will give you like leeway to change things, but they radically changed the mythology and it pissed me off, and I started...
Well, and people can sit there and be like, well, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's such a great actor. You're like, nope, no, he's not.
No.
Here's this movie.
No, and I just went, and my friend kept needling me about, this isn't this bad. You shut up! And I started letting some obscenities fly, and a guy got really mad about it because his 9-year-old was there. But in defense, Kevin, it was a Monday night. It was like 11 o'clock at night because we went to a late movie. Why is your 9-year-old kid up that late? And it's a school night.
Dude, I've gone to Walmart, and people are like shopping with the family at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like 18 people. Sure. They come in and they're like, it's like a clown car.
And I also know from... listening to your reviews and reading your reviews, you're not a fan of Tyler Perry.
No. Well, no, here's the thing. I think Tyler Perry has a very good heart.
Sure.
I mean, as a person.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a perfectly wonderful guy. He gave a shit ton of money to Grove City schools. I think he did. Like, he just showed up in Grove City and gave, like, an endowment to Southwestern City schools. Yeah, it made news like a... year to go. So I don't have a problem with him personally.
Sure, right. No, but his
work as a filmmaker, he's pretty awful.
On one hand, though, you got to give the man at least a little bit of credit that...
Well, I'd like a piece of that pie.
Yeah. He's making money like you wouldn't believe off of some hackneyed, retreaded...
Oh, yeah. His movies are terrible.
And if it's not a grouchy... It's not him dressed up as a grouchy grandma. Yeah. It's just like... soap opera, like drama between African American families. It's
heavy melodrama, and there's when it comes to, and this is me, and I'm going to be, dipping my toe into, maybe this might offend people, but there is definitely an audience that he goes for, which is the African American female, middle aged, church going, that is his target market.
Yeah.
So and he panders to that market. And if you watch his movies, there's a lot of pandering. Now, that market, for some reason, they love really dark, depressing movies. They love movies where just people get hit and get beat down. And it's not just Tyler Perry. Like, The Best Man Holiday, which came out in November.
Yeah.
It gets needlessly dark at times. And you're just like, wow. This is not a happy-go-lucky movie. This is heavy.
It's like NBC's Parenthood. It started off very happy-go-lucky, and then, like, every episode, somebody has cancer, somebody's getting divorced, somebody has cancer and is getting divorced. It's like, really?
Only in Tyler Perry, everybody gets AIDS. No.
Wow, really?
No, it's... Well, and you should look up, there was a great article on Jezebel earlier last year.
Okay.
After Temptations, Confessions of Marriage Counselor came out, where this woman just tears apart Tyler Perry for being, like, misogynistic and judgmental and anti-woman in this. And you can read the article. If you search through Google and you type in Confessions of Marriage Counselor Tyler Perry Jezebel, you should find the article. And it's a brilliantly written article. It actually made me go want to see the movie. Because the movie is terrible. Spoiler alert, it's like this, it's basically a woman who's seduced by Satan, and her mother's like literally says, it's not very subtle, he's the devil, and he is. He drives a red car, and he's mean, and then he gives her AIDS. It's seriously, it's like punishment. You have AIDS. You have AIDS for having sex. How backwards of thinking is that?
That is, I'm absolutely speechless.
You should see the movie. It's amazingly terrible. It has Kim Kardashian in it.
Maybe I should put that on a bad movie night.
Yeah.
You know,
get
watch.
Drunk.
Do you do bad movie nights?
I watch every Saturday night.
Yeah.
Me and friends on Twitter will live tweet a movie.
Sure. Right.
And we at 11 o'clock on Saturday night just go. If you go to Fat Guys in the Movies, there's a little link on the right hand side, and it'll tell what movies are. Now I'm not doing it like this coming week. This week we're doing. I don't know when this is going to air. So
this is going to air a couple of weeks.
Okay,
actually, it's
so
about 2 weeks.
We will be back on.
Sure.
Occasionally, occasionally things don't happen. Like when I go to these movie marathons.
Sure.
But it's fun to do. It's more fun to do cheesy movies. Every now and then we do a good movie.
Sure.
But it's more fun to do cheesy movies.
Yeah, my friends and I usually get together and we try to pick like really awful movies.
Hokey horror movies are the best.
Yeah.
Humanoids of the Deep. Yeah.
Yes. That was actually in a book that I bought. It was 101 cult films you need to see before you die.
Okay, who
I got it for $2. Who wrote that? I don't remember. I really don't. I bought it at Christmas time because it was $2 at Half Price Books.
Wow.
I was like, $2. I'm buying that.
There's some fantastic. That's one of the great things about the online stuff is,
sure.
You know, I mean, there's stuff that they stream that you actually can't get on DVD.
Right. So, like
Humanoids from the Deep.
Right. The Room.
The Room. Have you seen The Room? Yeah, The Room.
The Room is a pretty bad movie night.
The problem with The Room is it's now turned into this thing where people are like, oh no, he meant to do it.
Yeah.
No, Tommy Wiseau was an incompetent filmmaker.
Yeah, right.
Who had no idea what he was doing.
Right, exactly.
And made absolute shit.
As I explain, it's like when you slip and fall, and you go, I meant to do that.
I meant to do that.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm like, no, come on, the dude is inept. Birdemic.
See, what I don't like about Birdemic is it's just a bad movie.
Yeah, just straight up.
I mean, The Room, there's a charm of amazement to that
movie. Yeah, where Birdemic, there's none.
Birdemic's just terrible. It's just something that was then they're like, oh, it's the next big terrible movie. And I'm like, no, this is just a crappy independent film. That was shot on video and not terrible at all.
One of my favorites, Dolomite.
I've never seen Dolomite. I'm apparently very, very... I'm very delinquent on my blaxploitation movies.
I laugh because my friend says it best. Rudy Ray Moore directed, wrote, acted, danced, and sung in the movie, of which he does none of them well. And it's true. Dolomite is an awful movie, but
I should see that.
Yeah. Oh, you should.
Maybe in February we'll live tweet
Dolomite
for Black History Month.
Nice. Okay,
that's a good idea. I think I'll do that.
That's not a bad idea. Okay.
But no, I love watching bad movies. What's funny is you asked me to come up with top five worst movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like to call them, I don't like to say the worst movies ever, because I haven't seen, there's a lot of bad movies,
Right, sure. I mean, the ones that
the worst movies you've ever seen.
Right.
And I actually put on the list the movies I never want to see again. Okay. Because there's a lot of bad movies that are fun to watch.
Sure.
You know, the Mystery Science Theater, there's an entire show.
Right.
On
now, Riff Tracks.
Riff Tracks. Right. I watched those with my kids. And we watched Little Shop of Horrors, the original Corman version. That was with Riff Tracks and House on Haunted Hill, the Vincent Price, William Castle movie.
I
told you how I showed my kids all the
Alien
movies. Yeah. We do movie marathons as a family. And it started a year and a half ago, we watched all the Bond movies. There's 22.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot.
Yeah, it took us a week.
Okay.
It was 46 hours of movies.
Okay.
And we just watched like five a day. And these have grown into these I like now, I'm actually wearing a t-shirt now. This is our Monsterthon we did in October. We did a 24-hour horror movie marathon. And so and I have swag and I have programs and we do t-shirts and my wife made lounge pants, Halloween lounge pants. So we do all this fun stuff. When we did the Monsterthon, we showed House on Haunted Hill. And if you know any history of that movie, William Castle was the king of gimmicks back in the 50s, and he did the Tingler where he had the buzzers on the seats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone heard about those. He had, for House on Haunted Hill, in just like one or two theaters, he had an elaborate pulley system that when... Have you seen the movie?
A long, long time ago.
There's a scene where a skeleton comes up and assaults somebody. It's like the big climax, and she screams and everything. Excuse me. He had this pulley system, and he had a skeleton fly over the audience.
Really? And I bet that freaked people out.
Yeah.
Business. Yeah.
It's cheesy now. Yeah. So what I did is in our basement, because we had it downstairs, I set up this, I used fishing line, and I tied these skeletons to the ceiling and decorations. And so when that scene happened, I cut the line, and the skeletons fell like right in my kids' faces. And my 12-year-old screamed like a little girl, and my 10-year-old was in tears. So, but my wife was down because I'm like, oh, you got to come down and watch this. So I do stuff like that.
That's cool. Yeah. That's
so
cool.
So we watched the Rift Tracks of that. And we also watched Carnival of Souls.
What is Carnival?
It's this really super low budget film from the 60s. Early 60s, like 60, 61, right. 62. And it's about a woman who gets a job at a church as a church organist, but then starts seeing these ghosts and stuff. There's a guy whose face is in the movie who I know you've seen because it's a very common picture of people use and stuff. But it's a really atmospheric movie, but it's really low rent.
Okay.
But it kind of rises above that with its suspense. But then they did riff tracks of it, which was funny too.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So what are some of the movies you never want to see ever again?
All right. My worst five worst movies. And like I said, there's so many of that are fun.
Yeah, right. To watch. Yeah,
so I didn't put those on the list. One of them is Tetsuo the Iron Man, which is a Japanese cyberpunk movie in black and white. And it's just a bunch of yelling and running around. It's terrible.
I think, yeah.
It's a classic. I want to throw a classic on it. Yeah. And there's also the Twilight Saga, the entire saga. Because that series is terrible. And it teaches impressionable young girls that you always need to have a man in your life. And it's okay if he loves you so much he hurts you and could even kill you. But that's okay because that's the most important thing.
Mm.
That is the ultimate message of Twilight. Irreversible. That's a nice rape movie.
Yeah. Let me just tell you, I watched that one time and I was like, you know what? Maybe I should pull the blinds because it's going to be my luck that my neighbors are going to stop by for some random movie there's a...
John's watching a rape movie.
Yeah. Because
it goes on for 9 minutes.
Oh, it does. It gets very uncomfortable. Yeah, like I started going, okay, enough. Let's move on.
For me, it's not even... That 9 minute rape scene isn't what I hated about.
Yeah, it's just a poor movie. It's
heavy-handed. Yeah. I mean, that's Gaspar Noé's stuff anyways. Yeah. I mean, End of the Void was better, but it just... It's like the whole first... like. Reel of the film is because they tell it in reverse, and it's him swinging around this extreme gay nightclub called the Rectum, and the camera's just flinging back and forth, and it's got this sub bass, and I'm like, I get it, sub bass is supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, I get it, I don't need 10 minutes of it,
right? Yeah, you know? Yeah, and no, I yeah,
it's awful, and it's got terrible improv dialogue.
I will say another movie that made me very uncomfortable was Hard Candy.
I've never seen that.
It made me very uncomfortable for a while that I actually shut it off for a few minutes. I'm like, I need a moment just to...
I need a glass of wine. I need to go take a bubble bath.
It didn't make me feel romantic. Oh, okay. I'm just saying, it made me like, Yeah.
No, I've heard that's an uncomfortable film.
It is. I just feel, personally, I feel like the ending falls apart.
Yeah. Now, I haven't seen it, so...
Yeah, like, they get it, like, whoa, and then I'm like... just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of uncomfortable films. I mean, we talk about Serbian film.
Yeah.
Human Centipede's a terrible movie, but it's sort of a shockingly fun movie. I wrote an article for Film School Rejects in October where I interviewed a doctor and found and was asking her...
Could you do that?
Yeah, is this, in fact, medically accurate? And it's hysterical because I emailed it to her. She's a friend of mine. And,
oh, good, because I was going to say, I can just see you like randomly going around like the James Hospital going, excuse me, can I talk to you for a moment? Can I
talk about people together asked about?
Yeah, can we do that? I'm sorry. Security? What?
Is it possible? Can I do it in my basement? So, yeah, and I'm like, because I was going to ask my personal physician, and I'm like, because he's pretty cool, but I think, and he knows I do movies, but I'm like, I don't know if he'd want to do this, and then I'm like, ooh, Louise, I could ask her. And I'm like, so I emailed her, and she's kind of, I wouldn't say she's a prude, but she's a little more... She's
conservative.
Yeah, very conservative. Okay. And so, and her husband's in radio, and he used to be on WNCI on the morning show. And so she said to me, so I said, well, it's this movie, and I kind of want to ask you. She's like, well, I'm married to Jason, so I'm unfortunately aware of this film.
There's a and second so, one, too, isn't
Yeah,
there?
And that's terrible.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's bad.
Okay.
It's so bad. It is a terrible horror movie, but almost an amazing comedy. I don't think Tom Six meant it to be that. But it was funny because Louise emailed me and she's answering my question. And then at the end, she's like, no one should ever have home surgery by a crazy man. And I'm like, good to know.
And I duly noted. Duly noted.
She goes, this movie is super gross.
What else is on your list?
Okay, so Irreversible. Now, here's one. I'm going to be a little unfair with this one. It's called Front Porch Furniture, and nobody knows about it. No one's seen it because I used to work for Film Threat magazine, and I don't know if they still have this policy, but they used to back in the 10, 15 years ago. You could send them any of your movie. You can send whatever movie, and they would try to review it. Now, sometimes you get lost and people didn't do it. You could have some crappy 5-minute short you shot with your friends in their backyard, and they'd write a review on it. And I used to review some of these. And this was one that was shot on a VHS tape. called Front Porch Furniture, and it starts with a woman singing on an out-of-tune guitar about front porch furniture. And it's a story about how this city councilman's trying to outlaw upholstered furniture on your front porches. And that becomes the symbol for freedom in this. And it's terrible. It's so bad that they shot it on just like a VHS camcorder.
Yeah.
Because you can tell anytime there was a cut. You remember how you get that like rainbow line?
Yeah.
And you'd see that. And I'm like, they didn't spend any money on this.
No.
And it was like, it was like Honey Boo Boo's Mom.
Nice.
And it was so terrible. I remember I said it had the visual appeal of a snuff film. So that's unfair because this isn't done by Hollywood. This is done
by some local yokel.
Some guy who had to take a break from cooking meth.
Did you hear about, by the way, I saw this online, did you hear about the lowest grossing film of last year?
Well, which one was that?
It was called Storage 24.
I've seen that movie. I've got the Blu-ray.
Yeah, it was a British film. It made $72.
It is not a bad movie.
One theater, 1 week in America. $72.
That's too bad. That's the guy from Doctor Who.
Really?
Do you ever watch it? It's not Doctor Who. He played Mickey in the first couple seasons of the
New relaunch. I have a friend that's a gigantic Doctor Hooligan, if you will.
Oh.
So I'm
is that
unfamiliar.
A thing? Is that a name?
Doctor Hooligans? I don't know.
That sounds like Trekkie, where like the fans would be upset.
Probably. It's probably a derogatory term.
It probably is. I'm a huge Doctor Who.
I'm going to get a sonic screwdriver in the throat, aren't I?
You will. You don't even need to be at the throat. You can do it from across the room.
Yeah, that's true.
You won't regenerate because you're not a Time Lord.
So. No, I will not.
You know what I was thinking? I was in the shower today. Yeah, that's how much I care about this. I showered before I came.
You're not the stinky guy.
I'm not the stinky guy right now.
Okay, all right.
I mean, when you work from home, I will admit, you let that slough off. You sit there and be like, have I showered this year? Because it's the 8th, you know? And you're like, my first shower of 2014. So, I was thinking about this. Do you know what kind of world do we live in where Eric Roberts was both a Batman villain and a Doctor Who villain?
Yeah.
How the hell did that
happen? Yeah, I don't know.
And how did that escape everybody?
I don't know. Because I don't think anybody saw the Fox movie.
No.
Because he was only in that Fox movie. Right? Not been in any of the DCs that I'm aware of, right?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Eighth Doctor, that's it.
Yeah.
I know way more about Doctor Who. You don't even want to get me started on that. I've been watching a lot of it because they had the 50th anniversary.
Well, I understand, yeah. So has my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I smell a future podcast.
Yeah.
We could do a Dr. Hooligans.
Dr. Hooligans. You should get that website right now. Dr. Hooligans.
All right, well, with that here.
Wait, I got to tell you the worst movie ever made.
Okay, all right.
Project X. Not the one where they beat the monkeys.
Project X.
Yeah, it came out like 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it was about these people just having a party. It was a found footage film.
Oh yeah,
and I have to.
It was like an MTV like Spring Break, like wasn't it? Like,
well, it was just it's just a terrible movie. Yeah. And when I reviewed it, and I have to put it, I have to make a mention of it because when it came out, I declared it the worst movie of all time, not just of the history of cinema, but there will never be another movie as bad as this one. This has set a new low that will not be achieved lower. It's sort of like absolute zero. You cannot get colder than absolute zero. That's when all molecular motion stops. And that is the level of it has boobs in the movie. It's not even and I don't even
whoa.
Like it. Yeah. It's for a movie to have boobs immediately like
I mean that was the only saving grace of Showgirls. Boobs. I mean I was like, wow, boobs.
I talk about these all night movie marathons. The Drexel had a benefit to restore the 35mm projector and they're doing all night trailer film.
Yeah, right.
Well, it was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
3-4 hours. I took my kids and they're 9 and 12. Or 10 and 12. I left the 5-year-old at home. So we watch it and they're watching. They have some goofy movies and stuff. And then they start doing like the Russ Meyer movies and the sexploitation movies. And then they show the Red Band trailer for Showgirls.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my 10-year-old's like, there's a lot of boobs in this movie. And I'm like, there are a lot of boobs in this movie.
It's still awful,
though. It's terrible. I've never watched it a second time.
Yeah, I've never watched it. I think I've seen it twice. I've never watched it the third time.
I saw it in the theaters. Oh. I went to go see it. My wife and I were dating, and we went to go see it.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
It's really awesome until the rape happens, and then you're just like, oh, no making out now.
Yeah. Awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're really into it, and then that's even more awkward.
You know, I was kind
of dark like a Tyler Perry movie all of a sudden.
It did. It very much so did.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone to a movie and your wife was like, you liked it, but she was completely like disgusted with it or outraged by it? Or do you guys have similar movie tastes or no?
I don't know if there's ever been something that polarizing.
Okay. All right.
There's movies she's like that. We don't see movies much together because I got to go to the screenings and we got kids. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And she doesn't like having to deal with the screen. She would much rather go see a movie at, like, you know, the 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
A week or two after it opens. I mean, she'll go see, like, The Hunger Games.
Sure.
She's a big Twilight fan. She'd go see those opening weekend. But she wouldn't go with the insane people.
Right, who stay up all night long to go to the midnight showing. Yeah, right. Yeah.
She'd prefer it because it's obnoxious. Because the Twi Moms were really creepy.
The Twi Moms?
You've never heard of the term Twi Moms?
No, I haven't.
They were like...
They were the Twilight, obviously.
Right? Well, yeah, it was for Twilight, but you always had the teenage girls, but then you had the moms of the teenage girls who would read the books with their daughters. And they would just... Because they had... I guess their lives suck, and their love went out of their marriages, and they're like, oh, and so they're enamored with it. And it was really creepy because, like, Taylor Lautner was under 18. And they're like, oh, Taylor. And I had a friend from high school, so she's my age. She was she probably would have been late 30s when this came out. It was one of the movies. She's like, ooh, Taylor.
It's so disturbing that it's almost killing him.
I'm throwing up. Now she's like, oh, Taylor Lautner, he's so hot. And I come in, and she had like a teenage son. And I'm like, geez, he's your son age. She's not. He's like, well, he's 18 now. I go, no, when he made the movie.
Well, good. I'm glad that she said that, not go, well, he's not as hot as him. He's not as hot as my son.
Yeah, he said, well, yeah.
He's hotter than my son.
Yeah, my son doesn't have the abs. But the thing with that is she was...
And that great hair.
And her response was, she was like, well, when Britney Spears did the Hit Me Baby One More Time video when she was in the school, all you guys watched it. I'm like, yeah, but we watched it in shame. That's the difference. When there's
you
like some
proud of it,
yeah. When you see when you see the sex tape of the 18-year-old Disney star,
yeah.
You're like, you watch it because we're dudes,
right?
But we feel a sense of shame about it. We're not wearing it out of the Medal of Honor. And so then that like later that year, I went and saw Beezus and Ramona, which starred Selena Gomez.
And
what was funny is I went and saw it on her birthday. Because I just happened to see that it was her birthday, and it happened to be... It was this weird thing that was releasing on her birthday, so it kind of got noticed in the news. She was turning 18. And so I'm like, by Twilight standards, even though she was 17 when she filmed this, I can go see this and be like, whoa, what's up? Take it off, Selena!
Well, you can watch Spring Breakers.
Well, yeah, that too.
Which... is that an awful movie?
It's not good.
It's not good. I'll be honest, it was on at a bar one time, and I was captivated by it, but you couldn't hear it.
It's so great to watch, because it's just nothing but jiggle boobs and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, wow, this is great. I bet with the sound on, it's awful.
There's a... Harmony Korine is so full of himself. He's so pretentious.
Oh, I know.
He's so pretentious.
I do like, too, how he was made fun of on an episode of The Suit, because he got the date wrong to when he met his wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, was she underage?
Mm-hmm. Because he makes a statement about...
Really? A pervy filmmaker in his 30s macking on like an 18-year-old girl?
Yeah, like he got the date wrong and then he corrects himself. He's like, when I was down in Nashville and like, I don't know, I'm going to pick a date. He's like, in 2000. I met her. I was like,
I was stalking her high school. I mean, it's like, you know...
He is sleazy.
Oh, he is. Yeah. That's Hollywood, man.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Would you want to do that? You're in your late 30s. I mean, this is nothing against... If you're an 18-year-old girl and you're listening to this podcast...
What's wrong with
you're
you?
You're awesome. That's amazing. But if you're an 18... There's nothing against 18-year-old... But 18-year-old girls are stupid. I mean,
yeah,
they're kids.
They're
teenagers.
Yeah, they don't know any better.
Yeah. Right. I knew a guy when he was 30 and he was dating a 19-year-old. I'm like, I can't have a conversation with these people.
No. No.
It's insane. No. I mean, yeah, it's nice, you know, if you're doing the Don John thing and on the internet, you know.
If she's a trophy girlfriend, that's the benefit.
But why
would
you want to deal with that
shit? I don't know.
Jesus. Yeah. I said to my friend once, I'm like, watch out for the pretty girls. Because they're nuts.
I think we need to end right there on that note. I don't think that
I've alienated all the pretty girls in your audience.
Well, where can those pretty girls get in touch with you where they can send their hate emails and or tweets?
Well, I have a van down by the river. Just come knocking on the door. If it smells a little funny, don't worry about it. No. If you want to reach me, you can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com or 7mpictures.com. You can hear me every week on CD1025.
Yep.
Friday mornings around 9:30-ish, depending on what's on the schedule.
Right.
I also do 6:10. I also do, for, you know, if you're a
yeah,
little more...
Yeah, yeah, 6:10. Is more that conservative also on Friday?
For the fathers of these 18-year-olds that I've just offended. It's, I'll do Joel Riley's show.
Okay.
Like, right. At 7:45.
Okay.
And then occasionally, like, if Sterling is filling in for Corby, I'll show up on his show now and then.
Okay. All right.
But if you want to find me on Twitter, it's just Kevin Carr. Twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
You got it. All right. Well, real quick, I always end every podcast with what I like to call Orlando's fave.
Yeah, okay.
It's just a quick thing that I think is cool. But before I do that... Just
do you have the thing ready to beat me from... bleep out whatever, anything awful that I say?
No.
No more 18-year-old girl questions? Cooking meth? Making cookies?
This is uncensored, unscripted.
That's
just,
right.
This raw. Just, that's right.
We are the Serbian film of podcasts.
Man, I might have to see if I can fit that in a hashtag.
A Serbian podcast.
The Serbian film of pod. That's too many. That's 140 characters.
That'll be your tagline. You said there'd be like, oh, what's the, it's what's
the DVD cast?
The DVD. And then that's the tagline. The Serbian film of podcast.
Nice. Yeah. anyways, okay, before we get to my fave, and it's more literature themed, so to speak.
Reading.
It's for nerds.
What is this? What are we in the 1800s?
You can get in touch with me at PVDMVP on Twitter, or you can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can check out pvdcast.com. And, as always, you can listen to this particular podcast on Stitcher Radio. Go to Stitcher.com or go to the App Store and download it. My favorite this week is I just finished reading a comic book.
Okay.
Actually, a collection. It is Garth Ennis' Jennifer Blood, Volume 1.
Okay.
So the premise I thought was very interesting. I love Garth Ennis, by the way.
Okay.
I will read anything the guy writes. It's about a stereotypical suburban housewife mom, mm-hmm. who at night is pretty much an assassin, a hitman.
Awesome.
And she's out on a personal vendetta. I thought it was a pretty good book. Really? I liked it. It was interesting. It was intriguing. So
what who released it?
Oh, Dynamite Press.
Okay.
So
I am so not up on my comics, though.
Yeah, well, you know, that industry has changed a lot since, you know, probably you and I were kids.
Okay. I remember when it went through the changes in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when it was going into all the different formats and getting very, very adult-oriented.
Oh, yeah. And on top of the way it was distributed, too. You talk mm-hmm. about a lot of similarities between film and comics are very, very, very similar in how things are distributed nowadays versus the 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
What's nice is they still have them there, and I mean, you got places like the Laughing Ogre where you can get them.
Sure.
It's nice to still have brick and mortar stores.
It is, but I've said it many times on this podcast. I'd like to see them just come back to your regular, ordinary store, because I bought my comic books out of a little rack in a Rite Aid.
Oh yeah,
you know, back in the day, and that disappeared when comic book stores came around. No offense to comic book stores, but a lot of those Rite Aids and mom and pop stores got rid of them. I'd like to see them come back, you know, just more accessibility to them.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to see the, you know, housewife assassin on the
screen. Well, no, you're not going to
be like Harvey and Gold Key comics.
Yeah, you're not going to see Jennifer Blood probably on that. No. That's going to be
beautiful stories for ugly children and stuff like that.
Well, Kevin, hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on here.
Absolutely. Lots of fun.
Yeah, cool. Well, we'll maybe come back on sometime in the near future.
Sure.
Alright, that was fun. Alright, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to sign off. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.